Cairo, Seattle.
It's time to get schooled with a professor, John Clayton.
And welcome to Schooled with a Professor. And of course, I get to have some fun today because one of the things I love is obviously talking analytics. I love talking about the inside of football and also love talking schedule. And joining us is going to be Warren Sharp, who does such a great job with his analytics missions and all that stuff. And of course, I mean, you can get his Twitter handle, which is very good at Sharp Football. But also, Warren, what all sites do you have? Because, I mean, you break things down. We're going to break down a lot of the Seahawks stuff. And one of the things that I follow so much, and I'm just looking forward to hearing how you break down the schedule, because I've always been big on the schedule. But what sites can people go and find your stuff?
So, first of all, really excited to be on your podcast. Definitely a huge fan from back many years ago. I have sharpfootballstats.com, which is a free-to-use visualized data website. I think visualized data is kind of like the key to the future in terms of being able to present data that's coherent, easily understood and retained by people. So really excited about that site. And then during the season, I post predictions and analysis up at my sharpfootballanalysis.com website. So those are the two stats websites that I run.
Well, one of the things I saw recently that you put out is, you know, and you break down efficiency and comparisons and stuff like that. And this one is, I think, true to the heart of the Seahawks fans because it was so noticeable last year. Talking about Russell Wilson and his position targeting. And one of the things, and I know being on the sidelines for all the games, their inability to get the ball passing to running backs was so noticeable. And I think it was in part they couldn't run the ball and they couldn't get off to good starts. And that's going to obviously change with some of the stuff that they want to do this year with Brian Schottenheimer. But what was so noticeable was that they barely threw screen passes, and really didn't get into screen passes until later in the season. But when Thomas Rawls was out there and Chris Carson, they just basically stayed away. What do you kind of sum up is what their ability is on passing to running backs and how that can possibly change this year?
Yeah, and this is such an important topic, especially for Seahawks fans, because throwing to the running back is such an edge that is created in modern NFL. The running backs are so dynamic. It's very difficult to match up defenders against those players who are going to consistently be able to limit their production in the passing game. Whereas running the football, giving these guys carries, it's just so much more difficult to produce consistent yardage gains. You'll see oftentimes, you know, a guy has a nice 6-yard run followed by, you know, a 1-yard loss. And it's very difficult to gain that consistency unless you have a great offensive line like, you know, Dallas has with Ezekiel Elliott. And we know that Seattle doesn't have that. So you're going to have this massive variance and a lot of inconsistency when you're running the football. Throwing the football to the running backs is this big edge, and I've charted, tracked it up at my stats website, and there's definitely an edge for throwing the ball to the running backs, but a lot of people view running backs as third down backs, and they call them third down backs. Why? Because coaches will bring these guys in to mostly act as receiving outlets or receiving valves on third down, a little bit of pass protection, but most of these guys are more diminutive in size. So they're not going to be, you know, your strong fullbacks who can really pass block a legitimate pass rusher that's going to sack your quarterback. They're more guys that are going to chip and then get out in the route. Problem being, third down passes to running backs are the least efficient pass that a quarterback could throw on third down. The amount, and I look at a lot of things in success rate, which is the percentage of times that that play is going to gain the amount of required yards to be a successful play. On third down, it's very simple. A third down pass has to get a first down. That's how you define success on third down. And throwing to the running back on third down is the least effective time to target them. Throwing the football to the running backs on first and second down, the best time to target them, significant rise in success rate. And for you guys in particular, you guys targeted running backs the least in the NFL over the last 2 years on early downs, the least. The NFL average is 21%. You guys threw to them only 14% of all of your pass attempts. However, when you did throw to those guys, you ranked the second best in yards per attempt, the third best in success rate. Your success rate when you threw to those guys was substantially above the NFL average of 49%. You had far better success and a better passer rating when you were throwing the football to running backs on first and second down than even when you were throwing the ball to your wide receivers on first and second down. So I fully agree that especially with the offensive line and state that it's in, spending a high draft pick on Rashard Penny, you guys have to, and Schottenheimer needs to, incorporate throwing the football to the running back as opposed to handing the ball off to the running back far more often. The running back runs Seattle on first down alone. Let's compare Russell Wilson to a running back run. The last 2 years, Wilson, on any pass that he throws, 56% success rate, 8 yards per attempt, and a 99 passer rating. When you hand the ball off, the 56% drops to 39%, and the 8 yards per attempt drops down to 3.7 yards per carry. It's night and day difference. You want the ball in Wilson's hand on first down. And the other thing, I know I'm going a little bit long on this answer, John, but the other thing that's really important that people need to realize is what the defense is thinking. When you're on first down, you can do whatever you want to. If you're on third and long, the defense knows you're going to be passing, so they can pin their ears back and get after the quarterback. The easiest time for a quarterback to throw the football is when the defense doesn't know what you're going to do, where they have to send everything on the field. That's on first down, and you want the ball in Russell Wilson's hands to distribute the ball and make sure you get enough pass attempts to your running backs.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, that's the thing I would imagine. And how much is that going to change over time? Because I think that now what you're seeing, particularly with this great running back class, that there's more backs that can catch the ball and, you know, be more three down type of threats. For example, Rashard Penny is somebody that really caught the ball well in the rookie minicamp, and they did throw the ball a lot to him. And I would imagine that the plan would be, if he starts, he and Chris Carson, whatever, would be getting more pass plays.
And they need to. I agree. And the other thing that, especially these teams that are spending high picks on running backs, you saw it happen for the last 2 years. We had Leonard Fournette and then Saquon Barkley, and obviously we have Penny up in the first round too. One of the things that needs to be considered when you're drafting a player like that, and, you know, with the slotted system with the new CBA and the rookie wage scale and that sort of thing, these guys, I mean, they're getting paid a little bit more at some places than what their position should entail. Like, a lot of people don't feel like you should have to pay a running back as much as you might be paying, but you're also giving up, like, the opportunity cost of taking a player at that high of a running back at that level, where you could be taking other players, is significant too. And so one of the things that people need to realize, teams need to realize, is career extension when it comes to these players, keeping them healthy. It's much easier for running backs to get injured, especially with the lower extremities, when they're running up through the line of scrimmage. There's all the heavy defensive linemen and even their own offensive linemen falling on them, tackling them, helmet-to-helmet hits and things of that nature. If you get these guys the ball out in space a little bit, they're going up against smaller defenders. They're not going to have all the traffic around their lower extremities. It's just substantially better. And I mean, Russell Wilson himself, like we've mentioned before, they just don't do it enough. But when he throws the ball to these running backs on early downs, first and second down from under center, 12.1 yards per attempt to 84% success rate, a 152 passer rating. It's the best in the NFL, yet they've only attempted 19 passes to running backs from under center on early downs the last 2 years. That's the least in the NFL. If you look at other guys like Drew Brees, 75 attempts to running backs from under center on first or second down. Matt Ryan, 73. Joe Flacco, 86. Even Tom Brady is up there. So all these teams, they understand the efficiency that is gained there. Seattle needs to follow suit quickly.
So now when you look at the overall appearance of Russell Wilson, where do you kind of sum up the type of quarterback, where he would be in this league?
I love Russell Wilson. Look, I think especially, you know, we just had this whole debate about QB height, and I think Russell Wilson is definitely risen above that. But with obviously the early first-round draft pick of Baker Mayfield, but we have Drew Brees, we have Russell Wilson, now we're drafting Baker Mayfield. I think the stigma of these short quarterbacks should be erased for good. I mean, I would much rather, if you look at where these guys come from, they are overachieving at every level because they always have their height as a check mark against them, right? I would much rather have a guy who's had to earn it every single level of play from when he was younger till in the pros than a guy like a Brock Osweiler, who's been given every single opportunity and every single excuse made for him because he's the quote-unquote prototypical quarterback, this big style quarterback with a big arm and a big size. And I would much rather have the guy who's clawed his way to the top and had to get and overcome a lot of different things on his way. Russell Wilson is great. The difficult problem that obviously, at least out in Seattle, you guys were able to make those Super Bowls and win one of them. But the problem with, you know, any quarterback in the league, you had him for so many years in that rookie deal, which we talked about, the CBA, which gave all these rookies such a small salary cap overall compared to other guys, and then you had to pay him. And what, obviously, I'm sure this is no news to you, but you guys had the NFL, one of the more expensive offensive lines in the NFL for a number of years, and then you now have like the cheapest offensive line. I think right now, currently, the salary cap allocated to your offensive line is 29th. The last 2 years, I believe it's been dead last. It's just difficult to prioritize. And of course, now you have some losses on defense, so you can reallocate in the future. But it's the rebuilding process of building around a quarterback once you start paying him. And I think Russell Wilson is certainly deserving of what he's making from the salary potential, from the salary perspective. But it's just difficult because right now he's dealing with a very inexpensive offensive line, and he's had to use his mobility. I mean, put any other quarterback back there who's less mobile, see what they do. I think it's been phenomenal what he's been able to do, but it just gets difficult, and there's only so much you can ask of a guy like that before eventually some sort of injury is going to really derail things. So I hope they get that part figured out, but I love Russell Wilson. I love the way that he plays the game. I love his competitive nature, and I think he's perfect for a Pete Carroll-style offense.
Okay, so now one of the things, and this goes back to my relationship with Dick Vermeil. I think with Bud Goody, he always was into schedule, and he always had the philosophy, it's like, hey, you can be a Super Bowl team and go 500 against winning teams. You can't play a lot of them. You have to play, you know, you can play 6 and go 3-3, and then against the losing teams, you can go 10-0 and get a 13-3 record. You break down the schedule in such a different way, and of course, let's get into specifics of Seattle. You break it down that tough schedule for Seattle looks even tougher this year.
It does. It's very difficult. Now, by my metrics, you know, I like to look at strength of schedule from a totally different, through a totally different lens. I don't look at prior year win rate because I've done the regression analysis on all that. It's not helpful whatsoever. It literally has zero value in incorporating that. So what I do, I actually turn to your neighbors to the south, southeast, I guess, a little bit, and that's in Las Vegas. And I look at their season win totals that they're projecting for the teams from a few different sports books. I've been doing this for a number of years. And using that and also being able to update that fluidly throughout the course as those odds change slightly, as they're taking in money and adjusting the odds, I can project in a very accurate strength of schedule as to who you really are going to face projecting this upcoming year's opponent, as opposed to worrying about whatever these teams were last year. Based upon that measuring stick, what I have for you guys, unfortunately, is that you have the third most difficult schedule in the NFL this year after playing one of the top three easiest schedules in the NFL last year. I mean, if you guys look at your team through like an honest perspective in terms of what you think that your team was last year, you know, you were able to win a lot of games last year, even though your team was not nearly as good as what it had been in prior years. And part of that was because of your schedule. You played the second softest schedule in 2017 by my numbers. Now you've got the third most difficult. And I look at it holistically, like over the course of the entire schedule, as well as, you know, on a week-by-week basis. And if you look at, you know, the first month of the season for you guys, one of the easiest in the NFL. The only difficulty is you're playing three road games, but you got the Broncos who are – the problem with the Broncos, though, is – take a look at what the Denver Broncos do at home the first 2 weeks of the season. You can go back to like the year 2000, even beyond that. It is very difficult for teams to go into Denver in the first 2 weeks of the season and have success. They're so good at home. One of the reasons why is that teams approach it. There's lack of conditioning, in my opinion. You have teams that they're limiting the players, the veterans. They're trying to ease them through training camp. And then all of a sudden, boom, they have to go up to elevation in Denver and play a game, you know, a full game that really matters. All 60 minutes, we have these, you know, teams that are resting guys all week four, the preseason. And so it's very difficult to get up for those types of games. Then they play the Bears and the Cardinals. Those are easier opponents. Plus you get the Cowboys at home, and I think the Cowboys are going to do worse than their 9 projected wins that they've got this year. But if you look at that second half of the schedule, starting week 9, Obviously, you've got the Arizona Cardinals to end the season at home week 17, so let's pretend that doesn't exist. You are playing ridiculous, the most, by far, in a way, the most difficult schedule from week 9 and 16 in the entire NFL. There's not a single team on your schedule that's projected to have a losing record. You're playing like division winners, teams that are forecasted to win their division, including Green Bay, the Rams, the Chargers. The 49ers obviously are going to be a lot more competitive this year. And then you've got teams that maybe had slightly worse season last year, but are looking to rebound this year, like Carolina, throw in a game against the Vikings at home. It is just an absolutely brutal schedule. So you're absolutely right to be focused on strength of schedule and care about that. Too many people don't look at strength of schedule, especially in season, because these teams change a little bit in season with injuries. You still have to start looking at strength of schedule during the season, but right now it's actually more important than a lot of people think that it is, and you guys have a very difficult second half of it.
So based on that, what projection do you have as far as their win total this year?
Well, right now the Seahawks are projected to win 8.5 games. It depends on the book. Some of the books out in Vegas, one of them has them at 8, but it's at plus money, which basically means that their true number is just a little bit under 8 wins. But the odd thing to me, I mean, the shocking thing to me, if you're talking about the Seattle Seahawks, is the fact that one of the sports books out in Las Vegas actually projects every single one of their lines on the games in terms of how many games that they're going to be favored this year. And if you look, since Russell Wilson was drafted for Seattle, and these projections exist from weeks 2 through 16, so all the lines on the games are up week 1 everywhere, like sports books everywhere, but there's one book in particular out in Vegas who does the whole season up. They don't include week 17 because all the variants and players resting for playoff positioning and that sort of thing, but weeks 2 through 16, you guys have always been favored in at least 9 games since drafting Russell Wilson, since 2012, and most of the years has been double digits. This year, you're currently only favored in 3 games. And if you look at the games that you're favored by over 3 points, standard home field advantage is basically 3 points most often. You guys actually have a slight bit more than 3 points, especially in prime time. You guys have done great there, especially at the stadium. You guys' regular season games where you're favored by more than 3 points, this year, 0. Every single other year, it's been at least 8 games, most of the time 11, 12, sometimes even 13 years where you've been favored by over 3 points. This year, 0. So the sports books in Las Vegas, while they might have set a higher win total, it's just about average win total for you. It's on a game-by-game basis, just a very difficult schedule for them to see you having a lot of success this year. It's a very, very few number of games in terms of 3 that you're favored, something we have not seen in the Russell Wilson era at all.
Yeah, because, I mean, Russell, since coming into the league, has only been beaten by one quarterback for more wins, and that's Tom Brady. Home field advantage has been a big part of that. The one thing I look at the schedule is that, and again, the tough games seem to be more at home, and there's maybe a little bit easier games on the road, which can play to their advantage.
Yeah, and I always like to look for that. If I am hoping that a team is going to do well, like if I'm betting the over in their win total, I want them to face their stiffest competition at home, where they have a little bit of extra edge. And I want to face easier competition on the road, where they're going to be in games. A lot of these games that they're on the road, they are listed as the underdogs, like, for example, or pick 'em. They're not favored in these games, but to the Broncos, 2-point underdog. The Bears, it's a pick 'em. The Cardinals, week 4, that's a pick 'em. The Raiders and the Lions, they're only 1.5-point underdogs. Week 6 and 8. So if you look at them overall in terms of, okay, are they catching more points than 3 or more points on the road in these games, viewed as being equal to or worse than their opponents? The answer is no. They're being viewed as better than their opponents, but still not good enough as they've been in the past to actually be favored in these games. So they should be competitive, close games. But the line maker still views Seattle as the better team, just not good enough to be favored. And I do think that playing their most difficult games at home is certainly going to be an edge for them if that crowd gets behind them, if they have success early in those games. We've seen, like you said, time and time again, that your home field advantage is one of the few in the league that actually means something.
Yeah, and so it's kind of fascinating. Oh, again, tell us how to get all the stuff that you have, because, again, lots of good analytics on 3 different areas.
Yeah, so obviously you can follow me on Twitter at SharpFootball. You can check out my free-to-use stats website, sharpfootballstats.com, and you can follow me during the season at sharpfootballanalysis.com to get my predictions on a weekly basis.
Hey, Warren, great stuff, and looking forward to following it. Has been following it for some time, and it's excellent. So thank you for joining us with School with the Professor.
Hey, it's an honor to be on. Thanks for having me, John.
And that does it for this week's podcast. In between episodes, you can follow me on Twitter at ClaytonESPN. If you enjoy these weekly one-on-one conversations, consider leaving a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening to the show. Thanks for listening. See you next time on Schooled with the Professor.